Welcome to the Social Media Church Podcast. I'm Nils Smith, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nick Runyon. Nick, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Nils. How are you today?
I'm doing good. And we have a special episode of the podcast for everyone today. And so we pre-recorded this interview with a couple of special guests that you initially connected with. This is, I might say, this is definitely top three podcast, maybe the favorite interview I've ever done. So I cannot wait for our listeners to hear this. Nick, do you want to talk about who it is we interviewed and what we were doing?
So we tell people all the time that, you know, these aren't gigantic evil companies. In fact, the culture inside some of these companies, I think, are very much reflective of the gospel in a lot of ways, you know. And I will praise Silicon Valley all day long for kind of championing good values and that type of thing. I think Facebook is one of those companies. And some people are surprised to find out that because they recognize that people are whole people and they want balance in your life, they recognize that people have faith as well. And so there are affinity groups of employees inside of Facebook that are people of faith. So like there's a Christian Facebook group. And our friend Christy leads that. We've had a chance to go talk to Christy, you know, out there at the headquarters. And she joined us at a conference recently. But through her, she introduced us to somebody that she really admires and is a champion for, like, all things using Facebook well, but specifically Nona Jones, the director of strategic partnerships with Facebook, is really doing a lot of work with churches to help them use Facebook tools very well. And Facebook is, you know, they've redefined their focus as building meaningful communities. Nona's right in the middle of that, helping churches understand what that means and how do they do that. And so we thank Christy for the connection, and I agree. It was one of my favorite interviews so far with Nona, and we also brought in, at her suggestion, Bishop Walker from Mount Zion Church in Nashville, Tennessee, and so we all had a chance to sit down in Nashville and have a little chat, and I hope that people enjoyed as much as we did, because I thought it was very eye-opening to where Facebook is going. Yeah. How they're championing the work that a lot of churches are doing, and even to the point of resourcing that. So,
one of the things I want to say, Nick, as people listen to this interview, is Bishop Walker is I believe such a great example of what happens when the senior leader embraces social media. So, if you are not the senior leader in your church, I think this is one of those podcasts you might want to send to your senior leader and just hear how Bishop Walker is embracing social media from the top of the church leadership structure and communicating it from the pulpit. So listen in as Bishop Walker just talks about, because this isn't the beginning of their focus of doing online ministry, but as they've embraced it and now embracing Facebook in a more significant way, it's awesome to see what's happening.
That's such a great comment. I think there's a lot that churches can apply. So hopefully this is very helpful and people enjoy it.
Yes. And the siren, just so everyone knows, is behind me. It's not a part of our sound effects. So it is part of recording in New York City. Go ahead and listen now to this interview with Nona Jones and Bishop Walker. Welcome to the Social Media Church Podcast. I'm Nils Smith, and we're so excited about this week's podcast. And I'm joined by my co-host, Nick Runyon, and we have a couple of special guests. Nick, if you want to introduce our guests.
Yeah, we're looking forward to this. With us today is Nona Jones from Facebook. That's what it says on your profile. Works at Facebook, which is a badge of honor in the tech community.
Yes.
I mean, that's
it's such a privilege. It really is, yeah.
And also joining us is Bishop Walker from Mount Zion Church here in Nashville. Thank you for coming.
I am honored to be here. Honored, yes. That's
excellent. Author, preacher, and I had the privilege of just happened to meet some members of your church for lunch. We had lunch together.
Oh, that's amazing.
You're
in Nashville,
man.
Yeah,
that's
so well, cool. I mean,
they had great things to say about you and your church. And what they said over lunch, I was like, oh, I'm having a meeting this afternoon with Bishop Walker.
That's so cool.
And the young woman that I was eating with says, oh, and we're launching a Facebook thing this weekend. And
I said, guess what else?
Guess what else? Nona from Facebook is going to be there too.
That's so cool.
It was awesome.
I love it.
And I have to say, the whole situation got much warmer after that. Like we talked about.
If you lead, just tell anybody, I know Bishop Walker. They're like, I love you. Yeah. I love you. They don't know anything else about you.
So we are excited to have you guys here today and share a little bit about what you all are doing with Facebook and with your church community here in Nashville.
Awesome. Let's do it.
So I think a good place to start is like maybe some background introductions. Like, you know, just quick bio, tell people who you are.
Sure. Okay. So I lead Facebook's Faith-Based Partnerships, which is my opportunity to help communities of faith around the world optimize their use of Facebook to actually build community as opposed to just having a page and broadcasting content. So that's really kind of the nuts and bolts of the work that I do. Background, professionally, I've worked in the private sector, nonprofit sector, public sector, held executive roles in many different capacities. But I think the most important and relevant part of my background is I am in ministry. My husband's a pastor. We lead a congregation in Florida. So even though Facebook is in California, I actually live in Florida and I travel all over the world getting to do the work that I do. So it's a little bit about me.
So people always want to know, how do you get a job at Facebook? How did that come about?
So here's the funny thing. I actually got a call out of the blue. I didn't apply for the job. I didn't even know the job existed. Mark changed the mission of the company and suddenly there was need for leadership in the communities of faith space. And so I was asked to consider joining the company.
And for those who might not know, I think a lot of our audience might know, but like, what was that mission change?
Sure. So, great question. So prior to our current mission, the mission was make the world more open and connected, which was really about just getting people on the platform, like get people to use Facebook, connect to their family and friends. Well, we crossed the 2 billion member threshold back in February of last year. Yeah. And I think when that happened, Mark kind of had a moment of inflection. He was like, wait a minute, we have 2 billion people, a quarter of the Earth's population on our platform. Yeah. We need to do something with that to make the world better. And so the mission evolved to where now it's give people the power to build community and bring the world closer together. And so it's no longer just about connecting friends and family. It's also about connecting people to the things that matter to them, to the communities that matter to them, whether that's fitness, health, and obviously in this case, communities of faith.
That's awesome. So how long has it been now that you've been at Facebook?
I've been at Facebook a little over 8 months. Wow. And it feels like it's been 8 years. Yeah. There's been a lot that's happened over that time period.
So yeah, maybe share that 8 months. What's been surprising? Yeah. What's been exciting? What's been unexpected?
You know, so what's been surprising is Facebook is a huge company. I mean, we have almost 30,000 employees. And yet it still feels small because we're so focused on our mission. We're so focused on our values. Everyone is driving impact at all times. Yeah. And so I have the capacity to literally reach out to any team working on anything at any moment if I feel like I can add value to their work or I feel like their work can add value to mine. And so just as an example, I was talking to a pastor the other day who was like, I'd really love to learn more about this augmented reality and virtual reality and like how could that possibly be used for faith-based communities? And I was like, yeah, we should look into that. So I was able to make a call and be like, hey guys, what are y'all working on? You know? So it's really cool to be able to do that. Learned a lot about cross-functional working. You know, I've been in executive roles for the last 13 years, so I'm actually used to just telling my team this is what we need to do. In this role, it's not just about my team. It's also about the other teams and the work that they're doing and how do we add value to them. So it's been a little bit of a shift in thinking, which has been really, really good, thinking about collaborations.
And collaborating with the faith community, I think, is awesome. You know, there's this narrative that tends to come out, especially in like Christian technology circles, where it's like, we're going to get censored. These guys are working against us. And it's like, there are strong believers at every level of management in all of these companies.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that is a bit of a misconception. People assume that, you know, technology is just this godless space where people just don't believe. It's like, no, there are believers everywhere who are using the gifts and the platforms that God gives them in order to impact the kingdom. And so it's a pleasure to do this work.
And this connection here is very cool. So tell us a little bit, Bishop Walker, about yourself.
Wow. And your church. Well, you know, I'll tell you what, I lead the Mount Zion Church in Nashville, and Mount Zion is a 33,000 member congregation, very diverse, in three locations in Nashville. We also have a virtual space called Mount Zion Anywhere, which is somewhere 20,000 or so every weekend to watch and stream in, and it's a platform we developed to really minister to folks who would never really come into the brick and mortar space.
Yeah.
Really be a part. We kind of have this idea that people can, you know, belong before they believe, you know, and seek a friendly kind of place. And so I also serve as presiding bishop of the Full Gospel Baptist Church Fellowship, which is a network of churches around the world. It serves about 2 million people there. And so, but, you know, I've kind of really been interested in the last 10 years or so, more specifically, about how technology and the faith community work together. My friends call me the social media pastor. You know, they kind of pinned that to me because I have 100,000 followers on Periscope. Every single day I do a Periscope. Of course, Instagram, I'm on Instagram stories. And of course, this partnership with Facebook is so important because the mission that they have is so organic. It's so where I live. And I think it's a great opportunity to really move forward in terms of how we minister to people through evangelism, get people involved. You know, our ministry vision is connect, commit, change. And so the biggest thing for churches, how do you get folks connected?
Yep.
You know, a lot of folks who live next door, you know, don't even know each other. And sometimes, you know, social media and et cetera can kind of work against you and with you. And sometimes it's an opportunity to really make big small, right? To really create opportunities where people can really understand the resources that are around them and be a part of a family. And so that's where we're looking forward to.
So with Mount Zion Anywhere, I'm fascinated by that. And my background, I launched onlinechurch.com. So I lived in that world. I'm curious if there's any story that stands out to you that just jumps out of, like, this is why we launched this and built this platform.
Man, I have countless stories. Yeah. I've got stories of a young lady in New York. Yeah. A young lady in New York who was part of our ministry, joined Mount Zion Anywhere, connected. Yeah. I'd never met her. I'd gone to New York to minister. And, of course, you know, this young lady comes down and, you know, and she's crying. And basically she's like, you know what? You know, the ministry saved my life.
Yeah.
What do you mean? I lost a husband, lost her children. It was just a bad situation, right? All at the same time. And the Word of God met her in that place. She felt community because it wasn't just us ministering to her through that space, but it was also the infrastructure of us being able to connect with her, you know, us responding to her tweets and responding on Facebook and responding to her on Instagram. Those things were important. And so that story always stands out to me because I felt like that through that medium, somebody's life was really saved, literally. And she's just consistently faithful. We have, you know, this whole weekend, we bring in the Mount Zion Anywhere folks. They come in from all around the country, and it's an amazing reunion. They meet each other. It's just pretty awesome.
So I'm not sure how you guys define meaningful community at Facebook, but that sounds like that qualifies.
I think so. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I think the word that hurts it too often is we use the word virtual. As if it's not real.
It's
that's a real person.
That's a real life.
But when you put flesh to it, it takes it to a new understanding.
No, absolutely.
What's interesting too, I find, is that in these kind of digital spaces, people are more vulnerable. And so you find that even people are even faster to share what's going on with them than they would face-to-face. That's like face-to-face, people will put on a smile, they'll act like everything's okay, but you get them behind a computer screen and they're like, let me tell you what's really going on in my life.
So it's almost more real.
In
your physical congregation.
It is.
So Facebook's not anonymous, but there's some level of anonymity that in some other work that we've done in the past, we call it anonymous intimacy. When I know that you don't know me, but I need to just release this, I can get there really fast.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah.
So tell us about what you guys are working on together. This is really interesting.
Yes.
Ah, we're really excited.
And very new.
Excited about it.
You're pioneering.
Yeah.
So as I said earlier, the mission of Facebook is give people the power to build community. And the product that we're really anchoring this mission to is Facebook Groups. The research actually shows that out of the 100, 200 million Facebook groups that exist on our platform, 2% are of like a spiritual or religious nature, and 0% are connected to an institution of faith. The reason why that matters is because we know that communities of faith are highly meaningful to people. And so when you don't have these groups on the Facebook platform to actually meet the needs of people, there's an opportunity gap there. And so working with Mount Zion has been amazing because now we're going to be able to show the world the power of Facebook groups that are connected to institutions of faith. to actually drive connections between people who may be in the building, but they're never going to meet each other because they're on opposite sides of the building. And similarly, you have people, like you said, 20,000 people, you know, every week that are watching these sermons. Well, just imagine if you can go beyond the content to actually drive connections between people. And so that's what we're trying to do.
What do you expect this weekend? So you guys are doing a big kind of launch.
Yeah, we're doing two things actually, and I'm really pleased and excited about the partnership, because for Facebook to really, you know, come and be invested in the young people, you know, they have a great program happening on Saturday at a high school for junior high school and high school students who are interested in coding. So this will be real fun because the kids are really geeked about this. Community folks are like, you know, do I have to remember your church to be a part of this? Or can I bring? And I got a seventh grader who's like brilliant. Can they come? Yeah,
please
come on. Yeah, let me, the next Mark Zuckerberg, you know, come out of this, you know. So we're really excited about that. That really speaks, I think, to what this is really about. You know, it's really a community, you know, idea of really helping people build community. And you start with young people, you really, you know. But secondly, I think there's a great deal of enthusiasm around Sunday because, you know, our space is kind of unique, right? Mount Zion is, Nashville is a college town. This is the Athens of the South. So you have all these, you know, bright, techie young people who are just like really geek, like it's almost like this place of affirmation. Finally, you know, it makes sense, you know, technology and faith, you know, we've all been living that, you know, hoping that this would emerge, hoping that, you know, something like this would come to fruition. And of course, people are really excited about it. And I think it's going to really help us, as she said, you know, those folks who come, you know, make community meaningful. And when you think about it, in churches like ours who are multi, location, you know, you have a church here, there, or some folks, you know, I don't even know who you are.
Yeah.
But these communities really are going to be powerful because now these groups are going to make us really, 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 really understand the need for smaller intimacy in groups, and it's going to be powerful, so I'm excited.
That's amazing. So practically, can you talk about what it is you're doing? Is it one group for the whole church? Is it multiple groups for within the church? Or what's unveiling this weekend?
Yeah, testing one group right now, and I think the goal and the vision is to think about how do you structure it so that it really mirrors kind of the ministries of the church. So you may have like a group for women and teens, and you may have a group for men and married and divorced. But right now we're going to just kind of test the one group and see what people need before restructuring.
Okay. Yeah. And then practically, a lot of times a church will have a page already. Mm-hmm. How do you recommend differentiating your page from your group?
Love this question. So the question is, what is the difference between a page and a group? So whether it's a church or an organization, think about your Facebook presence like it's a house, right? Yeah. So your page is your front porch, that's your patio. That's kind of where people can passively take you in. They can see what you're about. They can look at the shrubbery and they can look at the paint, and they don't have to make a decision about anything because basically you're right there. So that's your page. Yeah. But your group is really like your living room. It's like your kitchen. It's where you actually have conversations. You get to know each other. You get to actually understand each other better. So there's a level of, to your point earlier, there's a level of intimacy that can happen within a group that you're just not going to see on a page. I mean, if you were to ask somebody on a page, so please let us know if you're having any issues with addiction.
Right.
Right.
Hello, world.
That's gonna go off like super silent.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're in a group, and I've seen this happen over and over again, if you're in a group, people will say things that they would not say on a page. Like if you were to ask, is anyone struggling with addictions? People will say, hey, raise my hand. Or I'll tell you, one of the churches I'm working with, like literally one of the largest churches in America, they've started to see a lot of posting in their group about suicide, where parents are struggling with children who are either trying to commit suicide or they have committed suicide. And so what's happened is because the pastor now sees that, he has visibility into what's happening within his body that he wouldn't normally have. Now he's actually creating ministries to address that. He's also addressing it from the pulpit. And those are things that you would not normally be able to do unless you had a space to actually find out what's happening within your body. So
at F8 last year, they talked about how groups, I think, had four times the engagement or three times the engagement than a page. Mm-hmm. Is that still I'm curious, new stats, is the engagement still much higher in groups than on pages?
Groups engagement is exponentially higher than pages for a few reasons. Again, one, a page is public.
Yes.
And so people don't feel as safe engaging with page content. Yeah. But in a group, you opt into the group based on something that's important to you. You have a passion around it. So I will tell you as an example, totally not related to church, I'm a member member of a group called Golden Doodles Rock. I have a golden doodle, and I love her to pieces, and sometimes she'll do things that worry me, and so I'll go on the group, and I'll post, and I'll be like, hey, Shiloh just did XYZ, and people will literally comment to me and say, hey, this is why, this is something you should think about. Next thing you know, I'm seeing Golden Doodles Rock, like, content all throughout my newsfeed, because I've engaged with content in that group.
Right.
And so that also dovetails into, we just changed our algorithm. I know there's been a lot of, you know, questions about what do we do now. The algorithm actually, like, upranks content related to groups because people opt into that. And so if you are looking to actually have more visibility with the people who are interested in your organization, groups are the way to go, because as people engage with that content, they'll see it more in their newsfeed.
Yeah, so from a church standpoint, Bishop Walker, your goal, talk about, like, what's your vision for your people, and then how does this help accomplish that?
Well, I think it's clear. I think it's creating a safe space for people to have meaningful conversations around what they need. And, of course, for us as leaders, there's no way to really minister and develop programs for folks if you don't really know what they need. And often, again, this is a platform that allows people to have that level of transparency. And, you know, you can kind of go and discover so much, you know, in those groups. And I think it also allows, you know, those of us who are leaders to engage in those groups, kind of, you know, demystifies a leadership role, allows us to be more personable in those spaces, you know. And so I, you know, my expectation is, you know, to discover a lot about our, really, I understand a lot about the DNA of our congregation, what's needed, what people are saying. You know, Jesus raised the question, who do men say that I am? Well, a group will tell you real quick, right? and it'll tell you what you need to do, you know, like, what do we need here? You know, there's a lot of different things, you know, that happen. We get a lot of his pastors, we get a lot of emails, you know, this situation's happening here. You know, realize someone else is dealing with that same thing. So when you're able to connect those folks who dealt with that. For instance, I remember, and I'll be honest with you, I was at the time, I couldn't find a space, and I know a group that I, you know, hopefully want to start one day. But when I, you know, I'm a widow pastor, and so being a leader who's had a loss, you know, at one point in your life, that space, finding people to connect with other folks who had that happen in leadership is a unique group dynamic. It's different just being a widow. When you're a leader, and so those are the kinds of things. So we have a widow's ministry in our church, and but being able to have those spaces where other folks can come in and talk and deal with a variety of different things. So, you know, I'm just excited about all the possibilities. And so it's just a unlimited, you know, amount of things we can do in this space.
I hear pastors often say that what's the return on investment of social media? And it's hard to measure, because you can measure giving, you can measure attendance. How are you measuring success with this new initiative?
Well, you know, again, as I shared earlier, you know, our theme in our ministry is connect, commit, change. And ultimately, it is the transformation we see in people's lives. It's the idea that people are connected. And they're more committed, because when you see, you can measure that, right? You can measure commitment, and commitment is a result of intentionality. This tool allows people to be intentional in terms of their engagement. And the more intentional people are in engaging an organization, the more likely they are to experience change. So for us, that helps us. That kind of becomes the caveat for us to measure the change, you know, and it's not out there. Have you changed?
Yeah.
No, I can tell you've changed, because you're like in this group all the time, and you now who've come in the group as a person who saw themselves, you know, as a person coming in needing help. Now you're the one leading a group, encouraging someone else, right? You're the one who's out here galvanizing folks, saying, hey, here's my story. And you see those who needed ministry too become those who become the ministers. And that's a powerful thing.
I love it. So you now have this window to pastor between Sundays. What that seems like, you doing Periscope every day, you doing Facebook Lives. You've seen that before now. What light bulb came on in your mind from a ministry standpoint? Because historically it's been Sunday to Sunday. But now we have six other days to minister and connect.
Absolutely. Six other days. And I think, again, it goes to, you know, what we do outside of the pulpit, what we do, what ministry really matters, you know. And it's like, you know, Facebook, again, you know, you have 2 billion people around the world, right? And Jesus would have been on Facebook, I'm sure. He was the first one to say, follow me. He had followers. Right? Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I'm convinced. Yeah, I'm sure he would have too, right? He probably wouldn't have read those comments.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, you think about the ability to reach folks, you know, to be able to network, and there are folks in, you know, in our platform in Mount Zion Anywhere, folks who are in Phoenix and Europe and Africa, all around the world, right? Mm-hmm. They can connect to a group, and if, whether you're in Europe, and whether you're in California, New York, all you guys are communicating. You're communicating because you're tied to our faith community. Is a powerful thing. You need to be able to come on and encourage, or even develop curriculum for you to write books around what you tell me you need. That to me because I love writing books, you know. So that helps me become a better leader, you know. And I get geeked about it. I'm really geeked. I am really geeked about it.
So, man, that's awesome. Nona, for a church that, so this is like the pro level, you know. But if I'm a pastor listening and it's like, okay, this all sounds good, how do I get started? What would your advice be? Like, how do you start down this path?
Well, number one, you can literally create a group like right now on your internet-enabled device. It's very simple. But what I would say is, just as you would not launch a church without a plan, you want to create a group with a plan as well. So
what do you think about when you make a group?
Well, number one, you need to think about, it's literally exactly what you would think about in planning a church is, okay, well, what exactly is the intent of this space? What do I want people to get out of this space? And then how do I intend to use the various tools available in this space to drive that? So for example, if the vision of the space, I'm working with some churches that are, you know, multi-site. If the vision of this space is to connect people at a campus, okay, then we probably need to make sure that it has a very local feel. We need to make sure that the campus leadership are highly engaged in the space. I think it's also good to try to figure out how do you mirror the church experience. Just as you wouldn't immediately throw flyers at people the moment they walk into your sanctuary, you don't want to like have that be the only content people see in your group, right? You want to welcome people into the space. But it's about having a vision and just making sure that the content drives the vision. It's so similar to what you would think about in starting a church. But again, the content is really what matters the most. You can use a ton of features in the group, such as live. You can use polls, which I think is great, especially for pastors as you're thinking about teaching series. You may have a few in your mind. And you're like, I really wonder what's relevant right now. You can ask people, like, I'm thinking about these three topics. What do you want to hear? So there's various tools that you have available to you to connect with people. But yeah, just think about what's the intent of the space. Yeah. And it's so important for pastors to make sure that just as you wouldn't start a campus and then hope it works out, you need to have leaders pastoring your community. That's what's most important, is have a leadership team that's intentionally leading the community, because things will happen in the community just as they would in church. I will tell you, I did
Oh, now the dirt comes out. Here we go.
Well, this isn't the dirt. This is an example. So one of the churches that I work with, they did a service where a woman joined the group because they asked people to join the group.
Yeah.
She joined the group, and that was her first time ever visiting. She posted in the group, she said, I just want to tell all of you that this was my first time at your church. And this woman came up to me and said that I was sitting in her seat and she'd been a member for 40 years and I will never be back.
Oh,
and that's
wow.
What she said. Now, here's what the beauty of that was, though. The pastor saw that. He himself responded and said, first of all, that is not our way. I'm so sorry you had that experience. That is not our culture. Please come back next week. We will save a seat for you. She came back. He addressed it from the pulpit. And I guarantee you the culture of that church will never be the same. Those are things wow. You wouldn't normally see. People literally just leave and talk about your church. But because you now see what's happening kind of underneath the covers, you can actually proactively address it. So
that is a great example.
That is a great example.
That's so good.
Are there any examples you've seen of churches misusing Facebook groups or common mistakes they've made as they jump into this space?
I wouldn't say this is a mistake. I just think maybe it's a lack of understanding. So there's three different privacy settings for groups. You can have a public group, which is like a page, which I don't recommend. A closed group requires that people are approved to join, and then you can have a secret group. I've seen churches use public groups and secret groups very wrong. Like a secret group basically saying, we're not going to tell you where it is. If you join our church, then we'll invite you to the group. It becomes like an exclusive experience. Yeah. You have to think of your Facebook group almost as a welcome center. Similar to what you said earlier about people belonging before they believe, it literally is a space where people who have never been to your building can finally connect with your community. And I guarantee you, if they discover that they love your community on Facebook, they're going to come to your building if they're in the vicinity.
Yeah.
So we have to rethink our approach. The other thing I will say is this. I spoke with a social media director at a very, very large church and was sharing, you know, the thought about using Facebook groups for discipleship and community building. And what she said to me was, you know, well, we're not really interested in that because we want to get people to the building. No, you have to touch people everywhere they are, whether that's on Facebook, whatever platform that may be. So I think it's about really shifting the paradigm from church as building to church as community, wherever that may be.
That's a big shift. So getting practical, though, on the public versus private group, you're saying not public but private, which means they have to approve. And so here's where I push on that.
Yeah.
Is when you do that, basically people are saying, I request to join. The feeling could be, well, then they're judging me immediately, whether I'm good enough to be in this group or not. other perceptions you think that can be created, or why the private versus public?
So part of the reason is simply because these groups are supposed to be safe spaces, you're going to have people talking about very sensitive things. Yeah, and so as part of the group join workflow, you can literally say the reason we're asking these questions is because we want to keep this community safe and we want you to feel comfortable posting whatever is happening in your life. That is the reason why.
That's great.
I think that's great advice. I mean, and I hope that the people listening are super encouraged by what you all are working on, and that Facebook is committed to this in the form of Nona Jones. And Bishop Walker, we wish you and your congregation all the best and a great launch this weekend. Thank you both for joining us today.
Our pleasure. Thank you for having us.